Do you feel like you need God's encouragement and wisdom throughout the week to take hold of His promise to fly like an eagle? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Eagles on the Hill. Let's join our host, Pastor Jeff Shike.
Hey people, I am your host, Pastor Jeff Shike. Thanks for joining us on this edition of Eagles on the Hill. So glad you're with us. We're going to continue, actually finish up with this particular podcast. We're going to finish up our Journeys of Paul series of podcasts. And we're going to go to a place today that we don't know whether Paul ever went to this place, but it's a very famous spot in the ancient world, particularly in ancient Greece. And the name of this place is Delphi. So let's take a look at the place. Let's take a look at where it is, what it's famous for, how it got famous, and just kind of how it fits into the New Testament as well. So let's take a look first. If you're on YouTube, we'll take a look at the map that we have of the journeys of Paul, particularly looking at the second missionary journey, where we've already talked about a number of these in the past, where Paul went into Greece, went through Philippi, Thessalonica, went to Berea, and then went down to Athens and Corinth and all the rest. Just to the northwest of Athens is a place called Delphi, and you'll see it located here on the map. So Delphi was a pretty famous spot. It's kind of out of the way. It's hard to get to. It's in the mountains. And yet, many key leaders for centuries would make their way there, even though it's not the easiest place to get to in the world. It's hard to get to today by bus even, and yet they didn't have buses back then to take you there. So it's a pretty tough place to get to. I'm not going to describe how you get there, but the point is it's not easy to get to, particularly if you're going over land. And yet many ancient leaders from Rome and Greece went there to find out about the future. So I have a couple of slides that I want to work through as we kind of introduce what Delphi is and what it's all about. So let's continue to work through those. This is a slide, if you're watching on YouTube, that kind of shows the modern day site, the excavation at Delphi, and all the different things that have been discovered there. So it's pretty amazing, all the different discoveries that have taken place. And this is kind of a map format. And two key spots that you want to kind of key in on that we're going to see some actual photos of are the theater and the sanctuary of Pythian Apollo. So the sanctuary of Apollo, that's the key god there on the site. So there's also the sanctuary of Athena down on the bottom right-hand corner of the site, but not as important for our exploration today. So that's what the site looks like. And let's take a look. This is what it looks like from the theater. So again, if you go back just to kind of remind you where we're looking from, the theater is to the top middle of the site, the north of the site. And if you go up to the theater and then look down, you'll from the mountains, you'll be able to see the sanctuary of Apollo. So here it is. This is, now you can see if you're watching on YouTube, this is the mountainous region that it's in. It's pretty tough sledding to get there. But anyway, the theater is there, and it's amazing how much is still left of that ancient theater from over 2,000 years ago. And then just ahead of the theater, just at the front of the theater, is that sanctuary of Apollo. So here's a close-up view of the Temple of Apollo. Now we're at the bottom of the theater and looking at that. But again, notice the mountains, very, very tough terrain to get around. And yet, as I said, many ancients went there because of wanting to find out the future. And there was an oracle of Delphi that people went to see. So there you go. We're going to talk about what was going on with the Oracle of Delphi in a little bit. But let's continue through the pictures so you get a sense of what's at the modern day site. The treasury building of Apollo has been reconstructed there. You see it on the left-hand side of this picture. So some of these have been reconstructed. Unlike in Israel, when you go to Israel, I'm hoping you get a chance to go to Israel at some point. Plan to go with us. We're going to be going again in 2026, so plan to go. But when you go there, the archaeologists that have discovered various sites like this one, for instance, if this was in Israel, what they would do is they would put a line along each of the formations so you would know what was found in situ, like what was, what's the English, I don't know what the English word for that is, what was found like as it was, like as it exists. So let's say these columns, if you're looking at the picture of the columns, the bottom of the columns you can see are gray and the top of the columns are kind of yellowish. It's, I don't know in this case because it's not, there's no line. But in Israel, let's say the bottom, the gray, was found just like that, standing up. They would put a line there, and then what they've then the rest of the column, let's say, had fallen over, they would set up the rest of the column, but there'd be a line so you could clearly tell what was found that way, standing up in this case, and what they had found that was fallen down and had reconstructed. In Greece, they don't do that. The archaeologists don't do that. And so you can't really tell, for instance, with this treasury building, what how it was found. It could be completely reconstructed, having been all knocked down by earthquakes and other things, or some of it could have been found just this way. You have to have a tour guide to tell you that, who knows more than I do. You can't just tell by walking along. Whereas in Israel, you can tell by walking along once you know that it's about an inch, inch and a half wide line, so it's pretty prominent. You can tell in Israel and most of the sites. All right, let's keep going. But the Temple of Athena, we said, was down to the bottom of the site, and so not as well preserved, not as crucial. In fact, you can see if you're looking at the picture, they have all these stones there. They haven't reconstructed it at all, but there it is. And then this is also right near the Temple of Athena. So I think that's what we got for the site. I don't think we have any more. Oh, we got one more picture, which we'll talk about in a minute. Let me just hold that one for a second. Okay. So let's talk a little bit first about this site and the Oracle of Delphi. Let me get some notes up on the screen here. So where did this site begin? The 12th century BC, there's evidence that there were some goat herders around this area. So it's 12th century. So, 1200 years, time of before the time of King David. Of course, King David wasn't in Greece, but anyway, there was some, the story is that there were some goat herders that were herding goats around here, and the goats would kind of go crazy. The goats would be like they were drunk. And so this was noticed by the shepherds with these goats. And so they built in the 12th century, then BC, Apollo was worshipped here, and they built a temple here. Today's ruins don't date back that far. Today's ruins, that temple of Apollo that I showed you, only date back to the 4th century BC, but nevertheless, Apollo was worshipped there for a long time. Now, what was discovered later of what was happening? Well, I'll give away the clue. What was happening is that there were vapors, gases coming out of the ground at this spot. And they would, it's basically like the goats were on laughing gas, only much more powerful. The ethylene is the gas that was coming out. And so they did some tests. They've done tests now on this, now that we get into modern times. And you only have to have about half of the ethylene to get what you would get from laughing gas when you go to the dentist. So basically, what would happen is they would have a sibyl, which is a female prophet. They'd have a sibyl, and they would seat her on a tripod above the hole in the ground where where these vapors were coming out of. And so the Pythia would inhale this breath coming out of there, which the word for breath in Greek is pneuma, which is the same word for spirit. So the Sibyl would breathe in these spirits and then begin to babble on and on. And so the priests would gather around and record what she was saying and translate it and bring it out to the people who were wanting to know their future from and learn their future from the Oracle of Delphi. So, very interesting that you have this really male-dominated Greek culture, classical Greek culture, very male-dominated, and the most influential voice in the culture of Greece and then Rome, the most influential voice belonged to this woman, this Sibyl, who was prophesying there at the Oracle, or so they say, at the Oracle of Delphi. So thousands of visitors would come through and consult this holy woman, this what they call the Pythia, and she spoke on behalf of the gods. Of course, there was no gods involved, and she wasn't speaking on behalf of anybody. She was basically just high up there and babbling on and on. And if you got too much ethylene intoxication, you could even die from it. So you have to be careful with that. But anyway, There you go. So that's kind of how the Oracle of Delphi was, quote unquote, prophesying. How she was getting her inspiration was from this ethylene intoxication that was coming out of the ground below her. Eventually, apparently, this ethylene vapors stopped. And so that was kind of the end of the Oracle of Delphi. Now, the picture that I kind of flashed up on the screen for you, let me get it back up here if I can. This picture is from the Sistine Chapel. And interestingly enough, when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, I did not know this because I'm not an art person, but when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, he painted a circle of people. And there were seven prophets, biblical prophets, in the circle, and five sibyls, including the Delphi sibyl, the Oracle of Delphi, is on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. And people question, well, why would Michelangelo put a pagan prophetess on the ceiling along with these biblical prophets? Was he mixing paganism with Christianity? And the answer to that is no. At least as far as I know, the answer is no. But what he was trying to show is that God loves the world enough that he will meet us where we are and reveal things to us where we are if we do not know him. So, for instance, think of the story of the Magi coming to see the baby Jesus. The scripture is clear that we should not look to the stars for inspiration, for prophecy about the future, that we should not do that. And yet, that does not limit God. God, in that particular case, used the stars to communicate about the birth of his son to the wise men. So, while we are prohibited from going to the Oracle of Delphi to find out what God has for the future, that doesn't mean that God can't, in his mercy and kindness and his love for people who don't have the scriptures, can reveal things that way. Another story like that would be oftentimes in Muslim-dominant countries. I think of Iran, I think of Saudi Arabia, these stories come from where there is no Christianity allowed, no Bible allowed. The number of converts, particularly the number of stories of conversions since 9/11, some of you are too young to know what 9/11 is. Hopefully, you learned about it in school. Those of us my age know we experienced 9/11. But since 9/11 in particular, lots and lots of stories coming out of Muslim lands of Jesus appearing to Muslims and saying to them, in effect, oftentimes the stories go this way, saying to them, you'll meet a man tomorrow wearing a Philadelphia Eagles sweatshirt. And so, a salute to service sweatshirt. And when you see this person walking down the street, stop him and ask him, please tell me about Jesus. And sure enough, the next day they find the guy walking down the street, celebrating his love for the Philadelphia Eagles and wearing a salute to service sweatshirt. And they ask him about Jesus and they come to faith in Jesus that way. I'm not sure it's ever. If I've ever heard of the dream, including the Philadelphia Eagles and the salute to service, but you get the idea of what I'm talking about there. So God is not limited to, we're limited to finding God in His Word. We don't try to speak to the dead. We don't try to go to the Oracle of Delphi. God is prohibited of finding God in the stars. God's prohibited that to us. But that doesn't mean that God can't, in His mercy and love, reveal Himself in that way to others. Specifically, as we think about the scriptures, and the Oracle of Delphi, one scripture that comes to mind is Ephesians chapter 5. In Ephesians chapter 5, God is again very clear, do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery, but instead be filled with the Spirit. And so we would not seek to experience the presence of God through some psychedelic drugs, through alcohol, through whatever, because of this prohibition that God gives us. But instead, God says, be filled with the Spirit. Pray for God's Spirit to fill us, that we might be able to follow Him well, that we might be able to sense what God has for us in the future, etc., etc. However, God's Spirit would want to reveal that to us. Again, interestingly, just a reminder, I said this earlier, but the word for Spirit, the Greek word for Spirit in the scriptures is pneuma, which is translated Spirit. But that is also the word, pneuma is the word for wind or breath as well. And so what was coming out of the ground for the Oracle of Delphi was pneuma, was a vapor, was a breath, was a wind coming out. And she was able then to give her prophecy. So interesting coincidence, I think, there, as the Greek language is used. Greek language uses one word for those same things. So anyway, that's a tour of Delphi. We don't know if St. Paul ever got there. It kind of reminds me, it's kind of, in my sense, the Greek version of Caesarea Philippi in Israel. Caesarea Philippi in Israel was a place, a big hole in the ground. It's, well, we've done a podcast on that, I believe. But a big hole in the ground, the gates of hell, it's called. And people went there. Goats are associated with that place as well. Goats are associated with Delphi. Kind of reminds me of this eerie place where people are going to, in this case, Delphi, receive revelation that is not from God at all. And so same thing with Caesarea Philippi, just a very pagan city there in Israel. Well, at least pagan back in the day. So there you have it. That's Delphi, a little introduction to Delphi. Encourage you, if you ever get a chance, to go on a Journeys of Paul tour. If we ever lead one again, I'm sure I'll put that out there. I don't know if we will or not, but certainly, God willing, we will lead tours to Israel. We got a couple scheduled for 2026. Put that on your bucket list. It's just fascinating to walk in the footsteps of Jesus. Walking in the footsteps of Paul is good. Walking in the footsteps of Jesus, you can't beat it. So join us there. Write us at eaglesonthehill211@gmail.com. Let us know your reactions to this podcast or others, your ideas, thoughts about what you'd like us to do a podcast about. Remember that those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength and soar on wings like eagles. Thanks for listening to the podcast.